The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop, looking out over London.
Good night, and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
All right, it is Wednesday. I was getting mixed up on my days. It is Wednesday here. It's the Nicole Sandler Show. You found us. Welcome to it. We are live at NicoleSandler.com, on YouTube, on TuneIn, and lots of other places. And then at 6 o'clock, you get to hear this show from the beginning at 6 Eastern on the Progressive Voices Network. So thank you for listening. And also, the podcast is always available, always free of charge. You can get it wherever you get your podcasts or at NicoleSandler.com. So I've been thinking a lot about this week in relation to last week. Now, last week, I was ensconced. Is that the word? I was reading a book in preparation for an interview that we'll do on Friday. Hold on. Let me grab the from over here. It's called The Opposite of Hate by Sally Cohn. I've known Sally for years and have been, you know, looking forward to this book. And I read it at a really interesting time because as I was in the thick of it, people were getting these bombs in the mail sent to, now we know, by the MAGA bomber, allegedly. It was just a very... It was a hateful time in this country. There was a lot of really shitty things going on. Of course, there was the shooting of those two black shoppers at that Kroger store in Kentucky, right? That didn't get a lot of media, I guess because we immediately sprung right into the MAGA bomber. And that was terrifying because bombs were going around the country. We didn't know where they were coming from when it was... learned that they probably all originated in Florida. Some of us said that figures. Thankfully, they caught the guy. And then we went immediately Saturday morning into the shooting in Pittsburgh. And just the unthinkable. I'll never forget. So Saturday morning, I got up. I went to a yoga class. So class started at 10:30. And I don't know what I was listening to on the way over to the yoga class, probably music or something to get me in the mood. I came out of the yoga class, went in the car and turned on the news and immediately start hearing, well, shots rang out and, so far we don't have a number. And I'm thinking, oh God, great. Another mass shooting. And it was a few minutes later as I'm driving home that I find out that the, the shooting was at a synagogue in Pittsburgh. Now, you know, I think these shootings all affect us. No matter where they are, no matter where you are in proximity to where the shooting is happening. I know that when the shooting happened in February at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School, that hit me hard because it's a high school in our community. It's not the one my kid went to, but it was the other one. It was the one my best friend, if she hadn't moved away, her kid would have gone to school there. This is part of our community and it was too close to home. But even when it's not that close to home, you either feel there, but for the grace of God, go I, or, you know, you feel horrible for the people who've been affected, but part of you says, well, you know, at least that wasn't me. That's not where your mind immediately goes, because if you're a good person, your mind goes to, oh, those poor people. Oh my God, I hope they're okay. Well, when I found out the shooting was at a synagogue on Saturday, I felt like I was punched in the stomach. Because as many of you know, if you've been listening to the show for any amount of time, you know that I'm Jewish. My family is Jewish. However, we are non-religious. We are secular Jews. My father, you know, raised three daughters. And back then, girls did, some girls got bat mitzvahed, but it was only the more religious ones, and we did not fit that category. When we moved down to Florida, we moved into a fairly Jewish neighborhood, and there was a temple built on the outskirts of the neighborhood. My parents thought, well, maybe we'll join just for the social aspect of it. That didn't last very long. I think we went to High Holy Day services once, and then we said, oh, we had enough of that. But by tradition, and if you've ever watched Fiddler on the Roof, you know what a big, how important tradition is in a Jewish family. And that's what I tend to still hold on to. Again, I'm not a religious person, but the traditions that are passed down from generation to generation still hold true. If I'm invited to a Seder, I go. I'd never put one on because I wouldn't know what the hell I'm doing. But you know, and my daughter, same thing. I've let her know that the family is Jewish. You can decide whatever you want for yourself when you're ready to decide. If she wanted to go to temple, I was happy to let her go. And the few times she asked, you know, to go to church with a friend of hers, I said, sure, go ahead. Just because I think it's good to be open, to be exposed to everything. But when I heard, the ages of the people who were killed in that synagogue, I was just mortified. The youngest was in his mid-50s. The oldest was a 97-year-old Holocaust survivor. So she survived Auschwitz, and she gets gunned down in her synagogue by just a hateful person with a gun. I didn't call him a madman. I called him a hateful person because the shooter in Pittsburgh has obviously a deep-seated hatred for the Jews. Now, I know, as even a secular Jew growing up in the United States, that Jewish people have been persecuted throughout the ages. And this doesn't take away from any of the other groups, demographic groups, religious groups, groups made up of, you know, based on the color of your skin, that there are many marginalized groups in our world. But the Jews do have a storied history. And I know the stories. I mean, I heard some from my grandparents and parents. And again, though we weren't a religious family at all, you know, there was never any question that I was brought up Jewish. And so, you know, I do qualify. I say, well, I'm a secular Jew. But even though I don't have religion, I don't believe in God, I still consider myself Jewish. And this weekend was, it sort of brought it all home. After Charlottesville and seeing those Nazis, and I'm not just using that as a pejorative. I mean, I'm saying that these people were literally neo-Nazis. The neo-Nazis and the Klans people carrying their torches and chanting, Jews will not replace us. I got to admit to starting to feel a little nervous. And then seeing what unfolded this past weekend in Pittsburgh, it made my heart hurt for a people that, being Jewish and being an Israeli are two different things. Being Jewish and being a Zionist are two different things. Being Jewish does not say anything about you one way or another in terms of support for or disgust with the Israelis and the conflict with the Palestinians and Gaza and the West Bank and the holy fuck up that is the Middle East. There's no easy answer, and I've never even suggested that I had an abstract one. I don't know. I feel for the people over there. I can see both sides of the argument, although I tend to maybe sympathize more with the Palestinians because it's David versus Goliath. I just know that the whole situation over there is untenable and it's sickening. And once again, wars are being fought for eons over religion. Imagine there were no religion. John Lennon was so way ahead of his time. Anyway, today we are going to talk a bit more about what happened in Pittsburgh. Our old friend Will Bunch, who lives in Philadelphia and writes for the Philadelphia Daily News and Inquirer, and he had a piece on it. And just to try to make sense of where we are and how we heal, how we move on from here. But I brought up hate. I was thinking a lot about hate because I was reading this book, The Opposite of Hate. And Sally will be on the show on Friday to talk about this. I don't know that you can find the opposite of hate. And the more these hateful acts keep happening, the more innocent people are gunned down with hatred as a motive. The more Caesar, whatever the bomber's name is, and it doesn't matter because I don't say his name anyway, he's the MAGA bomber, and the Pittsburgh shooter is the Pittsburgh shooter. You got to wonder how they were taught this stuff, how they were taught the hate. There's a song from the musical South Pacific called Carefully Taught. You've got to be taught to hate. Young children don't naturally hate. It's a learned emotion. And somebody's teaching people, the wrong things. All right. A lot to talk about today. I do have a bunch of news to get to. And what's news? I guess we'll just start and we'll do it live. So, here we go. Oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
All right. A day after visiting Pittsburgh to mourn the victims of the synagogue attack, Donald Trump returned to campaign mode, hitting 11 cities in 6 days before Election Day on Tuesday. Wow. By the way, 11 cities, all the flying on Air Force One, we get to pay for that, just in case you were wondering. During a three-hour stay in Pittsburgh yesterday, the president and the first lady somberly laid stones atop the 11 Star of David markers planted in the ground outside the Tree of Life Synagogue where 11 worshipers were gunned down. No local officials met with Trump. He didn't make any public remarks. And there were quite a few out on the streets protesting. Yeah, this is one of those angry Democrat mobs. And yeah, I know I said Democrat mobs. I was doing air quotes. So these are the protesters singing quietly Jewish songs, walking through the streets of their Pittsburgh neighborhood, not too far away from where Donald Trump was.
President Trump just arriving at the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh, where, as you know, 11 worshipers were murdered on Saturday in the worst anti-Semitic attack in the history of the United States. CNN's Miguel Marquez is in Pittsburgh. And Miguel, you've been with protesters. Where are you in relation to the synagogue, and what is the scene like there?
We're just a few blocks from the synagogue, and I think we're all a little shocked at how big and how quickly and how big this protest got. I want to show you sort of this is one protest that was coming up Forbes from this direction. There were maybe 2,000 people there by the end of it. And keep in mind, it was about 24 hours ago they started to organize this. Another protest group that was walking up the other direction on Forbes met this group, and then they all started marching, and it looks like they are taking a right down here on Shady. That way, another long block and a half is where the synagogue is. That is where President Trump is now. It is unclear what is going to happen. Certain parts of this protest just want to be heard. They want to know that they are concerned with the president's words. Others want to disrupt things more. We are going to follow it and see where it goes.
Donald Trump, after leaving Pittsburgh, tweeted, "Melania and I were treated very nicely yesterday in Pittsburgh. The office of the president was shown great respect on a very sad day and solemn day. We were treated so warmly. Small protest was not seen by us, staged far away. The fake news stories were just the opposite, disgraceful." Actually, there were not small protests. There were thousands of people out. There were a few protests that wound up coming together and marching through the streets. And at one point, the president's motorcade had to be rerouted because it couldn't get down the street because the protesters were there. Just saying. Earlier in the day Tuesday, the president made other news when he said he could end birthright citizenship with an executive order. But pretty much everyone else says that's unconstitutional. Shepard Smith, the one honest voice on Fox, pointed that out.
President Trump says he plans to sign an executive order to end the right of citizenship for children born in the United States whose parents are not citizens and are undocumented immigrants. Of course, he can't do that. The reason? The Constitution. Here's what the president said to Axios for an HBO documentary series out this weekend.
It was always told to me that you needed a constitutional amendment.
Right. 14th Amendment.
You don't.
You don't.
Number one, you don't need that. Number two,
I mean, that's in dispute.
You could definitely,
that's very much in dispute.
Well, you can definitely do it with an act of Congress, but now they're saying I can do it just with an executive order. Now, how ridiculous. We're the only country in the world where
no,
a person comes in, has a baby, and the baby is essentially a citizen of the United States for
no,
85
we're not,
years
dumb
with all
fuck.
Of those benefits. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. And it has to end.
Not the only country in the world.
Thank you, Chef.
There are 30 of them, including Canada next door. Further, constitutional scholars say in the event the president actually tries this move, there would be an immediate injunction and his order would not ever take effect. The Republican Senator Lindsey Graham has long pushed to change the Constitution on this matter, but that would require a two-thirds vote in the House of Representatives, plus a two-thirds vote in the U.S. Senate, and then ratification by three-fourths of the state's legislatures, and that is not under consideration.
Because that's really hard to do. Now, there are some constitutional amendments under consideration, but thankfully it's not easy to do because the right would like to do that. All right, back to this. Even Paul Ryan spoke out about Trump's claim that he could end birthright citizenship by executive order.
Well, you obviously cannot do that. You cannot end birthright citizenship with an executive order. We didn't like it when Obama tried changing immigration laws via executive action. And obviously, as conservatives, you know, we believe in the Constitution.
Whoops. Trump today, just today, bashed Paul Ryan for rejecting his call to end birthright citizenship. Trump tweeted, "Paul Ryan should be focusing on holding the majority rather than giving his opinions on birthright citizenship, something he knows nothing about. Our new Republican majority will work on this, closing the immigration loopholes and securing our border." Yeah, that was a dump this morning. Over on MSNBC, Chuck Todd wondered how to cover a dishonest proposal honestly.
How do you cover a dishonest proposal from the President of the United States honestly?
Good question.
So today the President proposed doing away with birthright citizenship, the constitutional right that any child born in the United States automatically becomes an American citizen. Now, what the President really is proposing is that we stop talking about bombs sent to his political opponents by a political supporter, that we stop talking about whether a mass murderer was somehow influenced by his words or policy proposals, that we stop talking about the connection between his rhetoric and a spike in ethnic attacks, and that we start talking about what really matters a week before the midterms, an unstoppable caravan of desperate refugees bent on destroying the country they hope to live in. Oh, let's pause this. So what do you call? So what do we do about this so-called birthright proposal? Do you ignore it? Well, that's difficult because Mr. Trump is, after all, the President of the United States, and what he says does matter. Do we take it seriously? Well, then we wind up letting President Trump become our assignment editor, talking about what he wants us to talk about, even though we know that using an executive order is a ludicrous way of doing it and totally unconstitutional. So here's what we'll do. We'll report that the president proposed ending birthright citizenship.
Okay.
The president proposed ending birthright citizenship.
Yep.
We'll point out that the Constitution will get in the way. The Constitution will get in the way.
Okay.
We'll report this so-called proposal will go nowhere. This so-called proposal will go nowhere. And it's an election. It's the final week before the election.
Yes,
oh,
it
and
is.
It's the final week for the, before the election. Here's what we won't do. We won't report on something that won't happen because the president won't be happy if we don't. Because you know what that would be?
Confusing?
That would be fake news.
Oh, I see. To me, it was just confusing. I don't know. You know, it's always hard. I'll get in a fight with anyone. I'll debate anyone. Except someone who just makes shit up. I think Obama was talking about this the other day in a clip that I played. It's one thing to argue with someone over substance, but when the other side just pulls their own made up facts out of thin air, how do you debate that? How do you push back on that when they're just blatantly lying? That's what the problem is here. There are no honest players on that side. They lie through their teeth about everything. And you need to look no further than pre-existing conditions, because this has been going on for years. Even while Obama was still in office, those people on the right, the Republicans in the House, voted something like 70 times to repeal well, not even replace, just repeal Obamacare, which means repealing the rule that made it illegal for insurance companies to kick you off of insurance or to deny you insurance because of a pre-existing condition. The Republicans have never raised one finger to stop that from happening. But now that they see the public tide has turned and people are, you know, wanting to make sure they get their pre-existing conditions covered, and now all these Republicans are saying, oh, we'll always protect your pre-existing conditions. No, you won't. That's complete and utter
bullshit.
There's no other word for it.
Bullshit.
That explains it perfectly. I was looking for my lies, because lies work as well. I misplaced my lies. Oh, here we go.
Lies, 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 yeah.
They're all lies. There's another big story that broke last night. New report surfaced yesterday about a plot to discredit Special Counsel Robert Mueller.
Over the past few weeks, several reporters say they have been contacted by a woman who said she was offered money to claim she was sexually harassed by Mueller. The reporters say they determined the harassment allegation seemed like a hoax. They say it is unclear if the woman had been offered money to make the claim. Some journalists told Mueller's office about the interactions. In a very rare public statement, a spokesperson for Robert Mueller wrote today, and we quote, "When we learned last week of allegations that women were offered money to make false claims about the special counsel, we immediately referred the matter to the FBI for investigation."
And it wasn't only that. Ari Melber has more on the what a weird, weird story. I mean, when I first saw hints of it come through on my phone yesterday, I thought, oh, no, Mueller? And then it very quickly became apparent that, no, somebody was trying to frame Mueller with a Me Too type of infraction.
October 22nd email, a man contacts you claiming to work for Surefire Intelligence and says, it's my understanding you may have had past encounters with Bob Mueller. I'd like to discuss these encounters with you. I believe a basic call, which I would compensate you for at whatever rate you see fit inside reason, would be a good place to start. Continuing this, he says, my organization's conducting an examination of Mueller's past. Tell me a decent method to contact you by telephone or signal, and a beginning rate to talk with you about all encounters you've had with Special Counsel Mueller. Goes on to say, we'd likewise pay you for any references that you may have and appreciate your discretion. It's very sensitive. What did you make of that inquiry?
I found it really creepy, to be honest with you. And immediately upon reading it, I went on the internet to try to find a phone number or some other method to contact the special counsel's office. And all I could find was an email. So I immediately forwarded the email. Just so I should add, I'd never met Robert Mueller.
Uh-oh.
I had no encounters, no phone calls. So I don't know him at all.
You don't know Bob Mueller, and you don't know why they came to you, other than I suppose that as a law professor, you're in this space.
I have no idea why they came to me. I mean, one thing I'm thinking is I had published an op-ed a few weeks earlier about the Kavanaugh hearings. Maybe that's how my name got to these people, but certainly, I'm the last person you'd want to send something to. I found the end of the email, they said something like, you know, please, you know, be discreet or keep this confidential. And I found that so amusing the minute I pressed send to send it off to the special counsel's office so they could look into it.
Again, a woman coming forth to say, hey, I've been contacted by these people who wanted me to set up Robert Mueller to claim that he had sexually assaulted me or harassed me. And she's like, I don't know these people and I don't know why they came to me, but I went right to the FBI. And apparently other journalists have heard similar stories. So this is all being investigated by the FBI. Oh, what a tangled web we weave. All right, one more thing before we break and get ready for Howie Klein. Happened to watch last night Hardball. Now, I don't ever watch Hardball. The TV is on for Ari Melber. At 7 o'clock, the channel gets changed because I can't handle Chris Wallace. I mean, Chris Matthews, sorry. Just don't do him. But last night, he had a town hall with Beto O'Rourke. Now, apparently, it was originally supposed to be both Beto O'Rourke and Ted Cruz. Ted Cruz chickened out. So Beto had the stage to himself. And for an hour, answered some of Tweety's questions and took a lot of questions from the audience. And he was great. I mean, and you already know that. That's why he's doing so well. And I could have played any one of a dozen answers for you today, but I just wanted to pull one of them out. He was asked about Trump's insanity of sending 5,000 troops to the southern border. It's something that's illegal. You can't have the military deployed on home turf. Anyway, this was Beto O'Rourke's answer.
Question.
Here's the question.
Hi, Congressman O'Rourke. It's a pleasure to be here before you. As one border native to another, I'd just like to ask you how you're going to address the issue of militarizing the border.
Yeah. This idea, Andrea, that we could send 5,000 U.S. service members to the border and somehow stop migrants, refugees, asylum seekers fleeing the most dangerous countries in the hemisphere, or that we could build a 2,000-mile wall at a cost of $30 billion, where we'd have to take someone's ranch or farm or property through the use of eminent domain to build something that we don't need at a time of record security and safety for border communities like mine in El Paso, perhaps yours, wherever you are on the border. It's ridiculous. And it's, again, this idea we can be governed by our fears, and then we are a very small people. Or we can be known by our ambitions. Remember the proud heritage of this defining immigrant story, state, and experience that is Texas. That's who we are. We can share with our friends and our colleagues in the Senate. El Paso is one of the safest cities in the United States of America, not in spite of, but because we are a city of immigrants. People left their hometown, their family, their comfort, their culture, their country, to come here, start anew as strangers in a strange land. Si queremos asegurar nuestras comunidades, no necesitamos muros. Necesitamos tratar cada persona con respeto y dignidad. Gracias para su pregunta. Gracias, Andrea.
God, he's good. I would so love to be able to vote for him. I already voted for Andrew Gillum, who was another good candidate that I was thrilled to vote for. But wow, Beto O'Rourke giving Texans somebody to vote for. We'll see what happens. 6 days to go, people. Oh. All right. Will Bunch is, did I say Howie Klein before? Will Bunch is going to join us in a few minutes. I keep wanting to make today Thursday instead of Wednesday. Will Bunch will be here in a few minutes. Before we go, I do need to, remind you of a few things. I'm so bad at asking for money. But it comes with the territory because, as you know, I do everything myself. This is a one woman show in every respect. I'm the producer, the booker, the board op, the engineer, the talent, the, you know, webmaster, and everybody else all rolled into one. The main reason I do it all myself is because I, you know, barely have enough money to support myself, let alone pay somebody else. It's a one person operation. But I do need your support. And I'm always not asking often enough, but I try to get the please out there occasionally. Some of you've been with me for a long time, and listener Sue in Illinois remembered that it's my birthday on Sunday, and she issued a challenge a couple of weeks ago to anybody who wants to make a donation. Up to $500, she will match all donations to double it, basically. So if you were thinking of sending in a donation but haven't gotten around to it, now would be a good time to do so, because your donation will be, in essence, doubled if you do it by November 4th. That's Sunday. What else? There was something else I was going to tell you. Now I don't remember what it was. That's okay. We'll take a very brief timeout and come back on the other side with Will Bunch of the Philadelphia Daily News and Philadelphia Inquirer next. It's on the Nicole Sandler Show at NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Where do bad state laws come from? I'll tell you about one today on Hightower's Radio Lowdown. If you're wondering where Congress's next truly bad idea will come from, keep an eye on a secretive far right-wing outfit called ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council. It's a legislative body house with an exclusive corporate clientele. The Koch brothers, AT&T, ExxonMobil, and other giants pay ALEC to hook them up with Republican state lawmakers who are, well, on the make. In exchange for sponsoring the corporation's special interest bills, the legislators gain corporate sugar daddies to fund their future campaigns. It's a hanky-panky quid pro quo that produces litter after litter of bad laws. Consider one that's an absolute corporate wet dream, for it would remove the people's power to elect our United States senators, letting state legislators choose them. This maneuver to take power from the people and turn it over to far higher legislators would return America to the days of outright auctioning of Senate seats. Until the people passed the 17th Amendment in 1913, senators were chosen in backroom deals between corporate bribers and crooked lawmakers. And Alec's draft proposal is bluntly succinct. The 17th Article of Amendment is hereby repealed. Back to the future. This idea of ripping off the people's democratic power is being touted by such intellectual giants as Rick Oops Perry, the corrupt ex-governor of Texas, who's now turning tricks for oil and nuclear power conglomerates as Trump's energy secretary. Perry wails that the 1913 law letting the public elect senators, quote, took the states out of the process. So now Rick and other corporate supremacists want to take the people out of the electoral process so the state can control it. The corporate state, that is. This is Jim Hightower saying, to repeal this effort, connect with commoncause.org.
Need an antidote to the progressive blues? Want some good news about how grassroots folks are rebelling against the corporate powers and winning? Well, here's an easy-to-swallow pill for you, the Hightower Lowdown. Hightower's monthly newsletter will give you the lowdown, even as it lifts you up. It's 4 pages a month, jam-packed with facts you can use, actions you can take, and Jim's own Texas humor, all for only $15 a year. To become a lowdowner, go to HightowerLowdown.org.
This is a huge, huge issue.
And we're talking about it. The Nicole Sandler Show on Progressive Voices and NicoleSandler.com.
All right, we are back. And it's always my pleasure to welcome to the show Will Bunch. He's a columnist at the Philadelphia Inquirer and Daily News. He's been doing that for a long time, writing about whatever is on his mind. Hey, Will.
Hey, Nicole. How you doing?
I'm doing okay. No, we talked about this last time, that you're here. And how often a week do you write a column?
I do it 3 times a week, which I've learned by columnist standards is kind of a lot. Most people usually do too. Uh-huh. I feel like my column is like a hybrid column blog, you know?
Yeah.
So, I try and respond with the, in the moment quality of a blogger. So, I feel like 2 times a week doesn't do that justice. I mean,
right.
There's so much going on. I feel like I try to write 3 times a week.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, there's pros and cons. I mean, sometimes I would like to have a little more time to do a little bit more reporting on some of the things I write about, but, you know, there's just so much to process every
right.
week.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I was particularly interested in talking to you after I read the column you posted a few days ago following the shooting in Pittsburgh. How far is Pittsburgh from Philadelphia? What's the relationship between the two cities?
It's far. I mean, some listeners, it's about 5 hours. So if you get, if some of your listeners, if they got in their cars and drove 5 hours, would probably go through 2 or 3 or 4 different states, you know. But because Philadelphia is on the extreme east end of the state, and Pittsburgh is almost on the extreme west end, so it's a good hike. We did send a reporter. I don't know if he flew. I mean, there's different ways you can. There's not too many flights because it's a weird distance, but you can take the train or mm-hmm. whatever. But we got a reporter there Saturday night for the vigils that were taking place. So, it's something that happened in our state. You know, our public officials, like our governor, Tom Wolf, who's running for re-election next week, and our Attorney General, Josh Shapiro, and other people are part of the group that's tasked with responding to that. You know, they had to make decisions like, for example, were they going to greet President Trump when he showed up without much interest in people having him come to Pittsburgh? You know, mm-hmm. and in fact, pretty much I think most of the state's leading politicians had nothing to do with him.
That's right.
I think I want to double check this. I heard this and I didn't confirm this, but I think even Pat Toomey, who is much despised by progressives,
mm-hmm.
Republican senator, I think, shunned Trump even.
I think everybody did. I don't think there was anybody in an official capacity who was there. I know that the leaders, congressional leaders from both parties, said, nope, we're not going to do this. He was asked not to come. Now, the rabbi of the Tree of Life synagogue said, well, of course, if he shows up, he'll be welcome. He's the president is always welcome. He was being magnanimous, I think. But there were a lot of
And you can't fault him for that. He's not a man of politics. He's a man of God. And I totally understand that decision. I respect that decision, frankly.
As do I. But I also respect the decisions of the mayor and everybody else who said this is not the right time. So soon after the killings and the Jewish people, we bury our own very quickly. And so they have 11 funerals that they've got to get through in the next few days. And then there's Shiva, the Jewish people sit Shiva for a week after a death to just sort of, let people come by and visit and grieve, go through the grieving process. He just had no regard for anybody else's feelings. I guess he's like, no, I'm doing 11 rallies in the next 6 days. This is when I can go. I'm going to go.
Right. And, and his aides, including Jared Kushner's son-in-law and
Jared Ivanka.
Ivanka, who he consults on all matters having to do with either Judaism or Israel or whatever. His advisors were, I'm sure, were telling them, look, you have to go. You have to show that you care about this because, this incident has broken the heart of America. As president, you can't ignore it.
Right.
But the thing is, we've never had a situation like this in this country. Here's a mass killing that, even though the killer, had this kind of complex, crazy worldview where he actually wasn't a big fan of Trump because he thought Trump wasn't anti-Semitic enough for him. But the thing is, what the killer did was he merged his anti-Semitism with fear of immigrants and fear of this caravan that was, slowly winding its way towards the U.S., which this guy called an invasion, basically echoing
Trump,
Fox News, and pretty much echoing Trump, who called it
an invasion,
assault on our country.
Right.
So, traditionally, like when you had the Charleston church shooting targeting African Americans, of course, President Obama went and attended the funeral service, and that's the normal presidential thing to do. But here you have a killing which the killer seems to have been motivated by the words coming from the president and his state-run media over at Fox News. And so, of course, I think people would be upset about his presence there. I think that's totally understandable. We've seen so many things in recent days that you can honestly say, we've never seen anything like this before.
Right.
And this is another one of those things, So you get another thing that you've never seen before, which is the president coming to Pittsburgh and no officials welcoming him. And then I was just reading up on this just right before I went on the air, but the people who did welcome Trump to Pittsburgh and received more officials from Israel, the U.S. ambassador.
I'm saying that backwards. The
Israeli ambassador to the United States,
right?
Who actually isn't American, which is bizarre, but was the highest ranking person to welcome him there.
And I've got to ask why, because this was not has nothing to do with Israel. The people in the synagogue, are Jewish. This has nothing to do with the state of Israel. They're two entirely different things.
I couldn't say it any better myself. Exactly. And because his policies are so insanely pro Benjamin Netanyahu's government in Israel. You've got this situation where Trump basically has a higher approval rating in Israel, if I'm not mistaken, than in the United States, or certainly among the world's nations. I think the only two nations where Trump has a positive approval rating are Israel and Russia. So,
wow.
um, uh, you know, so it's just a heartbreaking moment for this country on so many different levels.
It really is. I got to tell you, the one thing that came out of the story that was a good thing was the ability to educate people about Hias, Hebrew immigrant.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember.
Aid Society.
Aid Society.
Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society.
Right. And they've been working here for generations. My husband, David, his father escaped from a Russian pogrom when he was very young. They helped him get over here and get settled. You hear it from so many people now that and it's just like the best kept secret. I knew nothing about them. Actually, I had reached out to try to get somebody to come on the air to talk about what they do and how they, you know, how they survive, what they do for money, and talk about the history of the group. But they're so busy. And that's a good thing.
They're swamped. Yeah,
they're swamped.
Right. It is a good thing. Yeah. I mean, people want to tell their story. And I mean, I was lucky. I reached out to them Saturday. I have kind of a weird schedule. So one of those three columns a week that I write, I actually write it from my home on Sunday morning, which it's actually kind of nice to write at a time when nobody else is doing it. So, I was thinking, you know, it's funny because I had a column in my head kind of roughly worked out about the Florida bomber, because Friday and up until 9:45 Saturday morning, that's all anybody was talking about, right?
It was
this guy in Florida sending out the pipe bombs, right? And once Pittsburgh happened, I dropped everything and I said, well, I want to write about this, but I'm also just so heartbroken and so depressed about what's going on in the country. I don't want to just make it how terrible this guy was and how terrible things are,
right?
How terrible Trump and Fox News and their, you know, incitement is. When I saw very early on in the reporting of the story that, that this killer was motivated by his hatred for this group, Hias, I think they officially call themselves Hias now.
They don't go
by Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society anymore. That's their original name.
And what's interesting is they said, we used to be a group that helped Jews get settled, to immigrate and get settled, and now we help people immigrate and get settled because we're Jews.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, when you talk about, like, paying it forward.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's
This is like the ultimate case. It's like, here's a group, Jewish people who've been, you know, persecuted and the victims of pogroms and then the Holocaust, you know, for centuries, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this group was formed to help those people find a home, often right here in the United States.
That's
because
right.
The United States used to be a welcoming country for immigrants. And basically, partly because of efforts of people like them, I mean, Jewish people have been very successful. And so the need to resettle Jewish refugees hasn't 100% disappeared, but isn't what it was in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And rather than just saying, oh, well, our mission's accomplished and folding up their tent, they said, no, I mean, there's people all over the world who need the kind of help that our people needed 50, 100 years ago.
Right, and the kind of work we've been doing.
They shifted their mission. And so now, you know, now you have the former Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society helping Muslims escape from Syria, you know, and the horrible situation there, you know, and there's some, I believe, you know, it's not a lot, but I think there's some ultra conservative kind of, you know, Netanyahu type supporting Jewish groups that have criticized Hias.
Right.
You know, why are you helping Muslims?
Isn't that,
you know, but that's what they do, and they see a situation like the situation that's been happening on the U.S. southern border with Mexico, and they've sent representatives down there. They've used some of their resources to hire attorneys to help some of these people who have asylum cases, you know, fleeing Central America.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a wonderful group. So when I was deciding, you know, what I was going to get up and write Sunday morning, I said, I want to tell this story. I want to tell the story of not of hate so much, but of the love that somebody, that one person with hate tried to snuff out, you know?
Right.
You know, so that's why my Pittsburgh column was written about Hias. And, you know, like I said, I was lucky to get, I was probably one of the earlier people to reach out to them, so I was able to get a pretty high-ranking person.
I couldn't get
to talk to me for the column.
Yeah, the only thing I got in return was sort of an auto response saying, please contact our PR firm who's handling all the requests right now. So, oh, shit. I figured this isn't going to happen.
Yeah.
They're really swamped. So, but good.
Yeah.
I hope they're getting lots of recognition and lots of donations for work.
Well, exactly. I mean, the ultimate purpose of writing what I did was not only to tell their story, because, you know, I'm a storyteller and it's a good story, but the other reason is everybody wants to, I think, you know, the vast majority of people want to do good and they want to help in a situation like this. And when you see what happened in that synagogue and you're so heartbroken about it, and in this case there's something you can do. You can support the group that this guy with an AR-15 tried to, you know,
obliterate.
Silence or whatever. You can give them money, and it's, you know, I couldn't verbalize the exact web address here on the phone now, but it's very easy if you Google HIAS and go to their website, and you'll see one of the links right away is donate, and as is often the case in this day and age, you know, if you have a major credit card, you can probably make it a small donation to them.
Real easy. It's HIAS.org. Go to HIAS.org, and there's a donate right in the upper right-hand corner.
Right, exactly. And, you'll be, in doing so, you'll be making a statement. You know, well, you'll be actually helping people who are refugees or trying to flee warfare or poverty or misery. You'll be doing something good in the face of a tragedy. So I can't encourage people enough to support a group like HIAS. I mean, when you ask, you know, who are the good guys in a world that seems so troubled right now? These are the good guys.
Yeah,
these are the people.
Really are.
These are the people who need our support.
Without a doubt. Will Bunch is with us from the Philadelphia Daily News, Philadelphia Inquirer, where he writes a three times weekly column, always worth reading. You can follow Will on Twitter at Will_Bunch. So we are less than a week away from the midterm elections. How are you feeling?
I mean, after 2016, nobody wants to make predictions.
I know.
I know a lot of people I talk to kind of have the same general feelings that, you know, a few months ago, looking at the picture, you had to feel pretty good about the Democrats' chances because, you know, there was a lot of enthusiasm. You know, you saw people who had become kind of a resistance when Trump became president, and now they'd really focused on voting, and there was this energy. And then, you know, a month ago or 5 weeks ago, this Kavanaugh thing happened, and also when I say the Kavanaugh thing happened, I mean it was kind of the biggest piece in kind of a larger plan, and like, you know, who knew that Donald Trump was actually capable of carrying off a strategy, but you know, he did. It was a horrible, hateful, you know, arguably fascist kind of strategy, but it was a strategy nonetheless of, you know, finding the most divisive, most hateful issues and being aggressive and going around the country and having these rallies and stirring people up. And, you know, let's be honest. I mean, it works, you know. I mean, it's horrible to say, but, you know, hate and divisiveness with a purpose behind it can be effective. It's tragic, but, you know, so, I kind of felt at my lowest point a week or two ago when I saw a poll saying, you know, Democrats were still very excited about the election. You know, 72% of Democrats were very enthusiastic about voting in this election, which was the highest it's ever been for the Democrats. So that's great. So historically, that would mean a giant landslide for the Democrats. But then you look at the Republican side, and because of what Trump has been up to, 68% of Republicans were highly excited about voting in the election, which was also a record for the Republicans. So, you know, it's funny. I mean, we always complain that people don't care enough about our elections, especially the midterms. And, you know, and it's like now we know what it took, right? It took the most divisive, irresponsible campaign directed out of the White House in American history to get people worked up. But, you know, yeah. And you see what you've been seeing in the last week is you've been seeing these records for early voting just being shattered around
everywhere,
at least for midterms anyway. Mm-hmm. And even in some states, it looks like they may pass presidential year
yes.
early voting, which is just unheard of. But I do have a sense, and believe me, I was wrong 2 years ago, so I could be wrong again. But I do have a sense right now that the pendulum has been swinging back to the Democratic side to some degree. I think the Kavanaugh effect, people wondered if it was going to wear off. I do think it's worn off a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And, Trump has tried to keep those plates spinning by, sending troops to the border, coming out with this insane unconstitutional statement about birthright citizenship. I mean, he's trying to keep the intensity going. It's like he's picking up the pace. He's down in the boiler room throwing more coals on the fire, like frantically, trying to build the speed up of this thing. But I'm just not sure it's working. And obviously, when you see this pipe bomber who was a Trump fanatic, when you see how the words from Trump and Trump-like people, in the media and other politicians about the caravan, when you see how that inspired this Pittsburgh killer, yes, that has an effect on, independent people who don't like what's going on in politics today. I'm not saying it's going to have a gigantic effect, but in such an election, a few percentage points makes a huge difference. And I mm-hmm. do think the combination of kind of the Kavanaugh-type frenzy wearing off a little bit and people's revulsion over the hate crimes that have happened in the last week.
Yeah, the thing is, I think the Republicans, their disappointment with how Kavanaugh was treated, it riled them up a little bit. But I don't think that's going to have lasting power, staying power. I think the people who are freaked out by Kavanaugh being on the court, that has staying power. That's going to make the Democrats even more energized, because this guy who really rightfully should not be on the Supreme Court was pushed on there, in a less than above board way. I think if they had done a real investigation, things might be different. I think my thinking and hoping are sort of conflated here. I hope the Democrats stay enthusiastic, and I hope the Republicans are a little too giddy on their Trump and just forget to show up and vote. Because I'm really nervous. I'm really nervous that it should be a great day for the Democrats, but what gets me is that nagging feeling is, what if it isn't?
Yeah. Well, I think after what happened in November 2016, I think it's inevitable to have those feelings.
Mm-hmm.
I think the best thing Democrats can do is just throw those feelings out the window and just do what you have to do.
Yeah.
Know that you have to vote. Know that if you have the capacity to go out and canvass for a candidate this weekend, or if you have the financial ability to make one last contribution. I mean, do all the things you need to do to make it happen, but don't go in there with this, cynical sense of doom and gloom
that
it's not going to matter, because that's going to be a self-fulfilling prophecy
to some degree.
It's funny because I'm in a part of the country. I'm here in eastern Pennsylvania, and the closest contiguous state is New Jersey, just across the river.
Mm-hmm.
And what I see close by at hand, at least when it comes to the House races, so we had this redistricting in Pennsylvania, the redistricting basically guaranteed three or four additional Democrats. Including my own district, which is fantastic, For whatever reason, they had a couple of retirements in New Jersey in seats that probably should have been Democratic anyway, and now they're clearly going to be Democratic in these open seat races. So, I mean, I'm just looking in within a 100-mile radius of me, I'm looking at almost guaranteed 6 new Democratic seats.
Wow.
Which is 1/4 of the total they need to take the majority. And I know there's races in New York and in California where these districts probably shouldn't have been Republican in the first place. Mm-hmm. And in some of them, the Republicans are retiring because of that. And I think there's actually fewer toss-up races that the Democrats need to win than you realize for them to get to 23 or 24 or whatever.
Yeah.
I think it would be very hard for the Democrats not to at least get
the House
barely control of, and that's probably the worst case scenario. I mean, you know, I think if the trends of the last few days continue through Tuesday, it's not, you know, I mean, nobody wants to say it because you don't want people to get overconfident, whatever. But I do think if the current zeitgeist holds for another week, I wouldn't be surprised to see one of those elections that you see every 10 or 20 years where, you know, it's 40, 50, 55.
Oh,
I mean,
please.
I mean, there's so many races that are that close.
I know that could go either way. I mean, it could be a complete blowout for the Dems. Democrats could walk away with a lot, or it could be really, really, really close.
Yeah, it could be. I don't think. I just think there's too many districts like the ones that are near me in Pennsylvania, New Jersey, that are just too hotwired for a Democratic flip to be undone. That the absolute nightmare scenario where the House stays pretty much the same as it is. I just don't think that's plausible. You know, I mean, of course, the way the Republicans and Trump govern, you know, even a one vote majority for the Republicans would be
too much,
catastrophic at this point.
Yes, you know? Because let's face it, if the Republicans keep control of the Senate, maybe they could maybe even pick up a seat or two. And if by some chance things just shook out that way and they kept control of the House, this is not going to be a nice place to be. I think you will see a mass exodus of people trying to get out. Problem is, people like us, I don't know where we could go. I mean, most countries won't take you when you're over a certain age. I don't know what the answer is.
Yeah.
But at 58, by then, I'll be 59 on Sunday. I'm done for. I'm stuck here.
Yeah, well, I'm 6 weeks younger, 2 months younger than you, so I'm right behind you.
Yep.
Let's be honest. What progressives should have done is you think about this huge excess of progressives in California and New York, right?
Mm-hmm.
We should have started having them move to Wisconsin and Michigan and Pennsylvania, you know,
and
guaranteed victory in 2020 instead of having to think about moving to France or Canada or something like that.
I'd rather go to Canada or France, where they have better health care than we do.
You'd rather go to France than Wisconsin? That's weird. No, I'm kidding.
Unless something happened to Wisconsin that I don't know about.
Actually, Wisconsin's a very beautiful state.
I've heard.
My uncle used to have a cabin up at northern
too
Wisconsin.
Too cold. It's
very lovely
just
up there.
Too
yeah,
cold.
It's a little bit on the chilly
Says
side.
Says the woman who lives in Florida.
Right. Yeah. For you, it would definitely be too cold.
So. Yep. I know Canada, too, but I'd put up with it for their health care. Hopefully things will get better here. Will Bunch is his name. You can find Will, of course, at the Philadelphia Inquirer, the Philadelphia Daily News, where he writes his column or blog 3 times a week. You can find him on Twitter at Will_Bunch. And here, whenever I call him and say, please come on and talk about this. Thank you so much for being here today. This is, you know, it's such a frightening time. And I think the events of Saturday, well, all of last week with the two shootings and the bombing and it's just too much. We want things to be normal, and I don't think they're going to be normal again, at least until after the 2020 election.
You know, I think you're right, but we have to do, you know, we have to keep fighting, have to keep doing what we can.
That's it.
Thanks for having me on the call.
Well, thank you. One last question. Are you dressing up for Halloween?
No, I'm in charge of the I'm in charge of the door.
Candy?
So
yeah.
I'm in charge of the door and keeping the dogs from yapping too much. So those are my two jobs.
Gotcha. Well, mine too. Well, happy Halloween and don't eat too much candy.
No, yeah, that is a threat. So.
All right,
Nicole. Thanks,
talk
bud.
To you
happy
soon.
Halloween to you too.
Thank you, Will. Bye. And I'll see
all
you
right,
tomorrow.